So welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod,
episode 36.
Nice to be back.
Yes, we end up having a week off because of my stag do, and then we needed a rest.
It was a good weekend though, wasn't it?
It was a good weekend.
We had a very good weekend. We went clay pigeon shooting and we played pool and we ate stuff. And
it was lovely. And watched the boxing. It was great.
Had a big poker night and yeah, it was great.
But it's also good to be back with another episode. We felt like we've done some slightly bigger and maybe slightly more different topics recently with the fungi and the krill. And so we're back with a nice chilled species-specific episode this time, all about our rarest reptile, the smooth snake.
Coronella ostriaca.
Indeed. But
I really wanted to say that.
You had to get it in there early, didn't you?
Yeah.
But beforehand, any catch-up?
I haven't got masses of catch-up. Weather's got better, so I have been out and about taking a few more photographs. Osprey was seen at Pagham Harbour, which was really exciting. I've been falling over yellowhammers on their nature reserve over there, which has been also awesome.
You really shouldn't be stepping on them.
No, I shouldn't be doing that, but took a lot of photographs. But no, apart from that, I just want to say one little thing. We've now, I think 2 days ago, hit the 3,000 mark for downloads.
Ooh,
on our little
that's nice.
Podcast, which, you know, I know it's not quite in the numbers of Stephen Bartlett, but you know, we're very happy with that. 3,000 downloads.
So
thanks very much for everybody that's downloaded, streamed, listened to our little podcast.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah,
3,000's a nice milestone.
That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got a little bit of catch up.
Go on.
Yeah, with the new camera, I'm going to actually be coming with catch up every episode now, I reckon.
You've managed to get out with it because of the weather now.
Yeah, to be fair, the last week the weather's been awful, but prior to that I was out a lot. But yesterday I went and did a bit of moth trapping with a friend of the podcast, Josh, who's obviously been on an episode with us. And despite the sort of cold and windy weather of Friday night, we actually were quite successful. We had three species of hawk moth. And we had a nice time doing some photography with them. I did a really nice shot of the elephant hawk moth.
What an amazing moth that is. What an incredible
stunning
animal.
And so photogenic. We had a poplar hawk moth as well, which was just beautiful. And a bunch of other species I've forgotten. But it was really nice to get out and do a bit of moth trapping.
Yeah, you've got to keep an eye on his Bug in the Lens Instagram page, because I'm sure you'll put that elephant hawk moth on there. And it is, the colours of it just blew me away. It's absolutely amazing.
So it was a nice test, actually, because I also got a big diffuser and flash for the camera. So it was a nice way to go and test that out properly and try and see sort of the difference it makes having a diffuser on top of the camera. Yeah. And it was a big difference. And the day was nice anyway, because we also saw six adders, hundreds of slow worms, three grass snakes, all sorts.
Which is pretty amazing, really.
Not bad, really. So it was nice to get out and see some reptiles.
I've only ever seen an adder once in my life.
Got to come out with me and Josh.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, aren't I?
He knows all the good spots.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's nice to be out with the camera.
Lovely.
All right, so on to a different reptile then.
Yes, the smooth snake, which is, as you said, is the UK's rarest reptile.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I've not actually ever seen one. I have been to locations where they, you know, where there are healthy populations of them, but I've not actually.
I'm not sure many people have, actually.
No, and it's going to be interesting doing an episode on them, because their populations are they're very secretive as an animal, and so they're quite hard to monitor, and so they are rarest reptiles.
Yes, and they're only found on the heathlands of Dorset, Hampshire, Surrey and West Sussex.
Yeah, so they're really quite isolated. So we don't really know exactly what's going on with them, but it is thought that they are in decline, mainly because of things like habitat fragmentation, which we'll go on to. But because they are not very well known and they have quite a secretive lifestyle, and you know, they are rare and we might lose them if their habitat continues to be degraded, it'd be nice to have a little chat about them. I think lots of people maybe don't know too much about our native reptiles, so any excuse to talk about them, I think,
we did an episode on the adders.
And, we have done
and we did the natterjack toad as well,
yes,
didn't we? So we've done a few, but
obviously an amphibian rather than a reptile.
Yeah, okay.
But of the same.
Yeah, but the same amphibians and reptiles.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you for pointing that out to me.
It's okay. It's all good. So a little bit of introduction to the smooth snake. They're actually only identified for the first time in 1852, which doesn't seem that long ago, really. But again, probably lends to the fact that they're quite elusive. I still find, as much as I tend to lean towards the entomology and the insects, there's nothing quite as exciting as finding a snake. And I do think that's because we don't see them that often here.
No,
in the UK,
absolutely. So. Like I say, I've only ever seen an adder once in my life, and I can't remember the last time I saw a grass snake or a slow worm. Or
yeah, I mean, the number of times I see them has gone up massively since hanging out with Josh in the New Forest, because like I say, he does know the good spots. That being said, there are slow worms in my little nature reserve near my house and things like that, but there's something incredibly exciting about finding a snake in the UK.
Definitely, yeah.
And as you said, they are literally only found in sort of Dorset, Surrey, and I think there might even be a couple of populations around West Sussex, but they're not easily found at all. They look quite similar to an adder, but they can be distinguished by the fact they've got a much rounder head and a much more slender build, and as their name suggests, they are very smooth. So whereas the grass snake and adders have like a keel that runs down their each of their scales, giving a little bit of a ridge, the smooth snake's scales are, funnily enough, very smooth. Not that you'd ever really get a chance to find that out for yourself, because they are very highly protected. So it is illegal to pick them up, disturb them, damage them, even damage their, or disturb their habitats, unless you have a license to do so.
Yeah, they're protected under the Wildlife and Countryside Act of 1981 for priority species.
So it's not, so if you do ever find one, if you are lucky enough, I'm not suggesting you go and give it a little stroke to double check that it is a smooth snake. You should be able to distinguish it.
I want to say ectothermic.
Okay. Why would you like to say ectothermic?
Like I wanted to say Coronella ostriaca. I just like that word. Snakes, like all reptiles, are ectothermic.
Yeah, whereas we are endothermic.
Yeah, and so, I knew if I said ectothermic, then you'd go on and tell me what that means.
Yeah, so whereas people always think of reptiles as being cold-blooded, and it's sort of true, but I think it's a slight misrepresentation. They are ectothermic, meaning they can't warm up their own blood. So obviously mammals, we're endotherms, we generate a lot of heat.
Yeah, so they can't generate their own body heat.
Which is why they bask and sit in the sun. It's also why you typically don't find them in colder regions of the world, because there's not enough external heat to warm them up. And it's why the species that we have in the UK hibernate. Obviously they don't. Sort of, they're not out and about during winter months. Smooth snakes are exactly the same. They will go into hibernation at around October, and they sort of appear in the middle of April, early May time is when they start to sort of emerge. But yes, they are cold-blooded or ectotherms.
Ectothermic.
They reach size about 60 to 70 centimetres, so they're not massive snakes. They're not venomous. Obviously, the adder is our only venomous snake.
They live up to 20 years, which I was quite surprised about, that reptiles are quite long-lived, aren't
they? Yeah, in general, ectotherms are longer-lived because they obviously generating our own heat requires a huge amount of metabolic energy.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And so, again, one of the reasons why small mammals, things like little rodents, mice, don't live as long as something like an elephant, because we're going to get into science here, they've got a much larger surface area to volume ratio, so they lose their heat a lot quicker, which means they have to keep generating heat a lot more. So their heart rate's a lot higher and their metabolism's a lot higher. And so it's just a very high-energy process.
Yeah.
Whereas things, even like tarantulas, for example, tarantulas live 20, 30 years. Typically, the slower-moving ectothermic animals have longer lifespans because they're not quite so metabolically active. That was a proper scientific rabbit hole,
wasn't
it?
It was good. Yeah, I like it.
Back to the smooth snake. What's interesting is where you do find them, so in these little isolated pockets of heathland, typically you'll find all six native species of reptiles. They tend to exist in areas that's quite reptile heavy, and that's actually because they eat a lot of other reptiles.
Yeah.
So it forms a lot of their diet.
But isn't there only one place in the whole of the UK where you can find all six? Isn't that Hyde Heath?
No, Higher Hyde Heath is one of them.
Because I think they were talking about that on Springwatch, funnily enough, yesterday.
But,
or not yesterday, on Thursday.
For example, Studland Heath is another one. And for these little pockets, so I think, I'm pretty sure there is a little pocket of heathland in West Sussex where there's this very small, isolated smooth snake population. Take the smooth snakes out. It's a heathland. You're bound to have adders. You're bound to have grass snakes. You'll have your sand lizards. You'll have your viviparous lizards. So all the other reptiles are still going to, they all love that heathland habitat. It's just in a few little areas you also have smooth snakes off around. But lizards actually form quite a large part of their diet. But they will also eat mammals and birds. And as I said, they're not venomous, so they are constricting snakes. What else do we want to know about them?
Well, they emerge about March and April.
Yeah, and they
then
are.
And they'll start looking for a girly.
I've also got a word for you. You've thrown out ectothermic.
Go on.
What about ovoviviparous? Yeah. It's not very easy
to
say.
You're going to have to tell me what that means.
Which means...
You know, you are a herpetologist, aren't you? You are officially a herpetologist.
It is
you?
In my degree title. I did one module on it.
So you are actually a herpetologist,
yeah,
aren't you?
I'm just as much a herpetologist as I am a primatologist. But there we go. Neither of my dissertations were on reptiles. Ovoviviparous means that they incubate their eggs internally and give birth to live young. So they're not laying a little clutch of eggs, which is, I think, what most people would associate with snakes and a lot of reptiles. And it's slightly different. So our common lizard is a viviparous lizard because it gives birth to live young. The difference is being an ovoviviparous snake is they do have eggs. They just retain them internally.
Yeah, fascinating.
It's quite a hard thing to... I find it difficult to imagine keeping a clutch of eggs, especially as they give birth to 4 to 15 young
at a time.
Yeah,
that's a lot of eggs, isn't it, inside? Yeah.
But there you go. It's another... We've got all sorts of words coming out with this episode. Like we've said, they live in heathland, but specifically lowland heaths, which are made up of heathers, wildflowers, grasses, typically very acidic soil. And again, it's a habitat that... In general, all British reptiles absolutely, absolutely love. We'll go into that because it's really one of the main reasons why they are potentially struggling.
Yeah, and actually I found the research actually about heathland habitats, particularly lowland heathland habitats, really interesting because, of course, they're man-made landscapes.
Yeah.
Because if you go back, you know, long time, people cleared that land, they cut the trees down and they grazed their animals. And so heathland's been made by man. And actually, if you left a heathland alone, it would become a woodland.
Yeah, now that we've got so many species that thrive in them, where they are not naturally managed, they have to be very carefully, you know, human managed so that it doesn't develop into a forest.
Yeah, because I've got here, which I did find interesting, they grazed livestock, used gorse wood for firing bread ovens, harvested bracken for potash, heather for use as a building material, and turves for fuel where firewood was in short supply. So they used an awful lot of the landscape for existing.
Yeah.
And then they created this environment that we know now as heathland, and has become an incredibly biodiverse landscape.
Yeah, so. I mean, they are incredible, especially, I mean, I absolutely love them because they are especially good for, obviously, as we've said, reptiles, but all the insects as well. Each time I've gone out looking for adders and grass snakes, the diversity of things like dragonflies and damselflies and, well, actually a lot of spiders as well. So they are incredible habitats.
Yeah, and actually there's a sentence here which makes you realise just how valuable they are. A wildlife oasis rarer than the rainforest. So lowland heathland is an environment that's rarer than rainforests.
And so it really does make sense that we need to protect
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. So this is going to be a little bit of an interesting discussion when it comes to the threats, because normally when we do a species episode, we can say, oh, you know, over the last X number of years, the population has declined by this percentage, whereas... Over 160 years it's been since we identified smooth snake in the UK, as I said, 1852, and yet there's still so little that's actually known about its numbers, the population health and things like that, because it is so rare and they are so secretive. I mean, as you've said, you haven't seen an adder for however many years. I tend to find them because I go out very specifically looking for them. Lots of people are not stumbling across our reptiles.
No, but I've been on quite a few nature reserves where they have the corrugated metal and lots of them are numbered. They have various sites within nature reserves. And I think you can go out on guided walks and things looking for reptiles on nature reserves. And I've done one of those with a ranger on a nature reserve and still not seen a snake. So.
Time of day makes difference. Yeah. Also, I mean, for example, Josh, typically when he knows where the corrugated metal is, we will stand a good distance back and he will use binoculars to see if the snakes are sitting on top of it before we get close, because they are so sensitive to vibrations that if you start approaching, they're just as likely to slither away and not be there when you lift it up.
There's a word for that.
Refugia
is the term
for man-made bits of material that you leave out normally for reptiles, but they're great for all sorts of creatures. You find lots of centipedes and stuff on them as well. However, so like I said, the populations aren't necessarily really well understood, but most of our reptiles, all of our reptiles, are struggling in some regard. And so unless you've got any other intro facts or cultural references around the smooth snake, we can move into some of the threats to our rarest reptile.
Oh, that's fine. I think we need to go on to that because there are a few.
Yeah. And the main one is definitely going to be the loss of habitat. Yeah. So we've spoken about their preference for this lowland heathland and the fact that it's these little isolated pockets. And really that habitat is disappearing.
I think it's been, we've talked about fragmentation and we talk about it a lot. I think that's been fragmented so much that there are now only little pockets of heathland.
We have spoken about heathland before, I think, obviously in the Adder episode, and I think in a couple of other ones as well. But there's some quite concerning stats, like only a sixth of heathland that was present in England in 1800 still remains today. We've obviously said it's quite fragmented. It's normally due to pressures from things like housing development and agricultural land.
And also plantations where they've been planting non-native woodlands and what have you. So
we've also seen things like an increase in fires, which is really
climate
quite
change.
Bad for them, as well as human activities like leisure, things that we do, whether it's mountain biking or dog
walking. Yeah, I think
walking.
Also with that fragmentation of the habitat, it's often come around from housing developments, close to heathland. Obviously that's more people, more footfall, more predators such as cats and disturbances by dogs. So all of those factors have had a huge impact. And that also, again, we've talked about this from a respect of ground nesting birds, an increase in predators such as crows and foxes, because they will predate snakes and reptiles.
The other big one is, and we've mentioned this before, and I know it's a particular sore spot for the two of us, is game hunting.
Pheasants.
Because pheasants are expert snake killers, and we do release a huge number of pheasants into the land, obviously for the sole purpose of game shooting, which, again, if you've got a very small, vulnerable population and you release thousands of birds that are quite good at killing snakes, it's not a good thing.
Now, and of course, with that fragmentation, an increase in predators and predator numbers, those reptiles have nowhere else to go. They're isolated in a pocket. They can't just move on to the, to the adjoining heathland because of that fragmentation. So ultimately, their population declines rapidly.
Yeah, apparently, smooth snakes are not actually a very, what's called a mobile species. So even when there's fragmented sites, but very close to one another, the populations don't recolonize very well. So it's very unlikely that even if you've got a healthy smooth snake population in one pocket of heathland and then a second heathland sort of not too far away, it's not very common for the smooth snake population to migrate or travel across. They're not a mobile species. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about various birds have had their own episodes, and again, they suffer a lot from fragmentation, but it is easier for a bird population to fly off and find another pocket, whereas it's not quite so easy for a smooth snake to take a bit of a migration to in hunt for a healthier heathland habitat.
No, and as we also alluded to earlier on, gathering data on smooth snakes is incredibly difficult, isn't it? So, even though they can kind of estimate the decline, it's still a really difficult thing to, to pinpoint.
Yeah, and when it comes to the more positive part of the episode, we'll delve into some of the stuff that's being done to make the surveying easier. But on the point you've just made, whereas it's not too hard for people to do, a garden bird watch and note down blue tits and robins, it's a lot harder for people to go out and find, correctly identify and be comfortable going looking for snakes, because obviously lots of people are a little bit nervy around reptiles, and you also need to be able to do it in a very delicate and careful way to not disturb their habitat and all sorts of things like that. So it is a harder thing from a citizen science point of view. Most people can say, I've seen 10 robins.
There's lots of surveying and monitoring of birds that's done, obviously through the BTO, and there's lots of citizen science projects where people will go and count and monitor birds.
Same with butterflies.
On farmland, and it's much easier to sit and count those, and that data is much easier to gather. Smooth snakes are very secretive, very hard to see, and it's a really difficult It's a really difficult thing to monitor. You know, obviously with the decline in the heathland, it's obvious that is going to have a big effect.
Yeah, and going back to the heathland and sort of the loss of it, what was interesting, I didn't realise that historically, I know you've mentioned perhaps even more historically, going back further in time, a lot of the landscape was used for various purposes. I think when I'm using the word historically, I'm saying a much more recent timeline. The heathland in Britain was sort of almost considered to be wasteland because it's not a big forest or anything like that. It's sort of scrubland, isn't it?
Yes, and it's been overgrazed and it's very poor quality soil because of the way that it's been.
And it's acidic.
Yeah.
And so it's quite easy to sort of look at it and think that, oh, it might be barren or it's not an ecologically important part of the landscape, which is actually one of the reasons why people then go and build on it. Because it's not got the same image as going and cutting down a forest.
However, I will tell you, I walked across Hyde's Heath at RSPB Arn when all the heather was out.
In spring and summer, it is
It's one
stunning.
Of the most beautiful environments. And in fact, if RSPB Arn, I know they're highlighting it on Spring Watch at the moment, has a variety of environments there. It has woodland, it has salt marshes, it has estuaries. But it has this heathland, and we walked all of it, and I was totally and utterly blown away by the beauty of this
heath.
One of
my favourite habitats.
It was
really
absolutely stunning. It really was stunning.
But because it's, you know, apart from when it's in flower and stuff, it can be viewed as almost like a scrubby wasteland. Yeah. People have sort of hypothesised that it actually wasn't considered to be ecologically valuable until things became really quite obviously critical and we started to see decline in really iconic species like Dartford warblers was one of them, and nightjars, another episode that we've done that's touched
crickets.
On heathlands, where people absolutely flock to see Dartford warblers and nightjars, and when they start disappearing, people start to panic, and then people went, oh, actually, we really should be looking after our lowland heaths, and we haven't been for a long time.
And nathajack toads and woodlarks and all of
actually,
these
we've
things.
Done quite a few episodes
yes,
that touched
have,
on heathland, well, which, again, identifies, apart from the fact of decline in it, how many species rely on it.
Absolutely.
I've got more stats, but perhaps we don't need to delve into them. I end up going down a rabbit hole of a scientific paper of the history of heathland decline, which they sort of said started around the mid-18th century. But the rate of loss really increased during the 20th century. And the one stat I think I will rattle off just because it's concerning, but paints a picture, is that the once vast Dorset heaths, and I think that's where a lot of people associate heathland, especially in the south of England, which used to be around 40,000 hectares in 1750, was reduced to about a quarter of that by 1960. So 1750 to 1960, it dropped from to about a quarter of its original 40,000 hectares. And then this remaining quarter has been reduced by about half since 1960.
Yeah.
So we really are down to very small isolated pockets, which is why it's so easy for us to be like, oh yeah, Studland Heath and Higher Hyde Heath, which are quite small pockets of land rather than the great big lovely heathland that should cover a huge amount of Dorset.
Yeah.
We've got these little pockets that you drive to and from.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go and visit one on Tuesday because there's another one up at Farnham in Surrey. And again, it's an RSPB reserve, but they've got a fantastic bit of heathland there, which they've had funding for restoring a lot of it. And I'm going up specifically to see Dartford warblers on Tuesday. That's my goal, is to try and photograph a Dartford warbler. I've only done it once, and I've only ever done it once there. And I know they do have them down in RSPB on. You can't get there at the moment because they're doing spring watch. So I'm pretty sure I can't get on. And
go see some adders.
Yeah, I could take a picture of YOLO and Chris Packham, I guess. But so I'm going up to a bit of heathland up in Surrey. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. Can I take a day off work? Actually, I'm abseiling on that day.
Oh, yes, all in the name of
the Rivers Trust.
Yeah.
We got it in again. We got it in, yeah. So the biggest threat really to smooth snakes is this loss of the habitat that it relies so heavily on, the lowland heaths. We've built on it, we've heavily grazed it. The problem is if we don't now manage it properly, it can then overdevelop into a habitat that's then no longer suitable to the heathland specialists. And so we really have lost a huge amount. But in the name of keeping this episode perhaps short and sweet, we move on to the conservation around.
Well, there is positive news.
There is.
And we like a bit of positive news. And actually, there's quite a bit regarding heathland projects.
Yeah, and it's another example of these incredible organisations that are dedicated to quite specific tasks, and it's just, again, fantastic to see the work that's been going on. So I don't know if you want to kick it off.
Well, do you want to kick off with the snakes in the heather?
Snakes in the heather.
You do that one.
Okay, so this was a project that was led by Amphibian and Reptile Conservation. From now on, I'll just call them ARC. But it also had lots of partners, you know, landowners, site managers, all sorts of things. And it was funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. And it ran from August 2019 to quite recently, which was February 2024,
wasn't it? Yeah.
And the aim was to help conserve smooth snake. So as should be evident by the name Snakes in the Heather, although to be fair that could also very easily relate to our adder population. What was really cool is, along with trying to look after the actual habitat, is a huge amount of the project was trying to raise public awareness, raise the knowledge around the conservation needs of our reptile populations and the importance of these heathland habitats, and also engage in volunteers and train them up in this new way of sort of monitoring our reptile and specifically smooth snake populations. And they actually developed new survey techniques, and they have a hub, an online hub called the ARC Survey Hub, which collects and collates all of the data. But what was brilliant is, across the time frame of the project, they had 357 people trained in surveying for reptiles, obviously specifically for smooth snakes, but reptiles in general. They had 1,520 heathland reptile surveys were actually carried out. Over 18,000 records were collected, including 1,600 smooth snakes, which is just
amazing.
Brilliant.
That's brilliant.
And the really nice thing was that smooth snakes were found in 23 1-kilometre squares where there were no previous records, which again shows that the populations perhaps are there.
Yeah.
We just don't know about them. So this kind of project, that's, we always think of projects as being straight into habitat restoration, which again is really important for heathland, but We bang on about it all the time. We need to know where the populations are, where the conservation efforts need to be focused. And that's one of the biggest challenges with an elusive species like the smooth snake. So the fact that they're finding new areas with populations is just, it's just brilliant. But alongside the monitoring, they did also have habitat sort of events to really help the lowland heathlands. They had 66 of those as well. Despite the fact that it's come to an end, the project, the ARC hub remains live, and the trained surveyors are continuing to get out there and try and find and monitor these populations. And the most important, or not necessarily the most, but very importantly, a lot of the established networks that were formed through the project with landowners and site managers and volunteers are being maintained. So it's not just cool, project done, move on. The sort of communication between all the different stakeholders is ongoing, so that we're trying to get everybody with sort of a stake in the heathland health and who have a role to play in the reptile conservation, all sort of communicating and working together to try and look after our snakes, which is just really important. It's not something that any one group can do alone. Same with all of our conservation efforts. It has to be a collaborative partnership process, because I've said people own different patches of land and have different reasons to build and conserve, and we need everybody working together. So the fact that it formed those connections is just brilliant.
I think also what's so fantastic about these projects when they happen on that kind of level with all of these different organisations is it just raises so much awareness of how important those habitats are and how important the projects are, and it gets so many people involved. And then that word of mouth and, you know, that education and that awareness is just so amazing when these projects start.
Yeah, and community engagement was a big part of Snakes in the Heather. They had events, because there are lots of people that enjoy heathland for dog walking, for example, and dogs are a potential or disturbance worry when it comes to reptiles that typically like to sit and bask, and they need to sit and warm up, as we've obviously spoken about. And a lot of them sit still and wait for prey, and if they start being disturbed, then again, it's very energy costly for them. And so educating, a bit like with the ground nesting birds, educating people on the wildlife in the area and how to be respectful and work alongside it, doesn't mean you can't visit the heathland, you just have to be mindful of how you interact with the land. All of that is not necessarily the fault of people just don't necessarily know. There are loads of reasons why people wouldn't know there are smooth snakes in the area, so that education is absolutely vital.
And I see it, you know, as a volunteer site ranger at Pagham, I see that all the time, where I'm chatting to people who have, you know, walking dogs or whatever, and when you talk to them about the fact that on that little part of the beach there are nesting ringed plovers, so please, you know, we have a little area there, we do put signs up, but please, you know, just keep away from that. They have people haven't, lots of people haven't even heard of a ringed plover.
Yeah.
So, you know, it isn't always people being
malicious.
It's an ignorance thing.
Yeah,
so and that's why projects like this are so important.
It works both ways as well, because I think it helps people connect with the habitat when they understand, because it's an exciting thing. We've got a rare snake in our local heathland, so it's good for the snakes, but it's also nice for people to be able to connect with the nature that's on their doorstep in some cases.
Absolutely. Well, there was a project, it is actually finished now. It went from 2016 to 2021. It was a five-year project. Again, National Lottery Heritage Fund funded it, £2 million, but it successfully conserved and enhanced 23,825 hectares, which is the equivalent of 18,000 football pitches.
Yeah, I guess that is a lot of
hectares. Lowland heath, and it's been so successful. And it focused on heathland. I mean, this isn't necessarily completely directed at smooth snakes. It's just heathland restoration.
Which is great because it benefits everything.
Absolutely.
That there.
And it focused on 41 sites stretching from Borden in Hampshire to Pulborough in West Sussex. And it was really needed because apparently there was less than 1% of former heathland remains in the South Downs National Park. And what was left was very fragmented.
Yeah, the West Sussex heathlands are very small pockets.
But the stats here are absolutely incredible. And I won't go through them all because there's so many.
We'll link to the.
There's so many successful things that relate to the field cricket numbers thriving again, natterjack toads. Dartford warbler numbers suddenly increased hugely on this heathland. After several years of absence, RSPB Pulborough has two successful breeding pairs of woodlark and nightjars. But this was the bit I really liked, because it was all about volunteers. 349 events have taken place with over 16,000 people participating in a range of activities aimed at raising awareness and encouraging people to care for their local heath. Nearly 115 volunteers have dedicated almost 50,000 hours to help looking after and maintaining the heathland. And it's been absolutely incredible success. And as you said, with the other project, it was delivered by 11 partners, which was the Amphibian and Reptile Conservation, Forestry England, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, Hampshire County Council, Lynchmere Society, Ministry of Defence, National Trust, Natural England, RSPB, South Downs National Park Authority and the Sussex Wildlife Trust. So all of those organisations, it was a massive undertaking, but it's been hugely successful. And just the results coming through and the data coming through of the increased populations, not just of our native reptiles and amphibians, but the birds, the invertebrates, it's been incredible.
So it's obviously one of the reasons why having habitat focused projects is so important, because it just benefits everything, all the biodiversity in the area, and it's just brilliant to see. But we absolutely love it when big partnership collaborative projects happen, because they just have the ability to make change happen across a much larger scale, and see it covering such, what was that, from Bournemouth down to Poole?
Pulborough,
is just
absolutely incredible.
A massive chunk of the south coast.
I think it's Borden, which is in Hampshire, down to Pulborough in West Sussex. So we love success stories like that. And I think because of the success of that, you know, that work is ongoing all of the time. The RSPB, I mean, I'm a bit biased towards the RSPB because I'm a volunteer and I love them as an organisation. They do so much work for their heathland restoration. And again, I talked about Dartford Warblers, some of the work. The Dartford Warblers reached their highest ever numbers on RSPB reserves in 2022 with 258 pairs recorded, which is an incredible 39% increase in the number of pairs compared to 2021. So that's just in 1 year, nearly 40% increase because of the work done on the habitat that they thrive in.
And again, as such,
I know we've gone off the smooth snake sort of subject here, but the whole thing is
all connected.
It's all connected, and that habitat is where smooth snakes will thrive.
Yeah, we've spoken about the fact that smooth snakes are a difficult thing to spot and monitor. And it was nice to give a little bit of an introduction and talk a little bit about smooth snake as a species, as well as random science rabbit holes. But as I mentioned, when it came to the decline of heathland, it takes something like the charismatic, maybe iconic heathland species like Dartford warblers dropping off for people to go, oh, but we need to do something here. So to see that species then start to increase is a good sign of the restoration work that's going on, which obviously will feed down to all the other heathland specialists, including the smooth snake.
Yes, of course. If all the biodiversity, all the other wildlife is thriving, then that creates the perfect habitat for smooth snakes to thrive as well. So,
and to go slightly back to a more specific example, and we're sticking with ARC here because they really are the main charity organisations that focus
on to their websites, brilliant website,
and amphibians. They're brilliant. They're the ones that so often arrange things like your toad patrols where volunteers get out.
And there's so much good info on their
it's
website.
It's brilliant. But way back in 2009, they actually reintroduced 10 smooth snakes to Devon. And I think that they hadn't been seen there for something like 50 years. And they took the snakes from a population that seemed to be doing really well from Dorset. And then they went back and monitored the population in Devon 14 years later. So not quite 2024, but around, 14 after 2009, 2023.
That'll do
it. So not that long ago. And the population seems to be doing really well. And they actually managed to record quite a lot of young snakes in the more recent survey. So breeding must be happening. And again, I'll link to the ARC website because they've got a really good video of the project officers talking about the reintroduction that happened 14 years ago and how the population is doing now. So they've got a really nice video on that whole reintroduction, but the fact that they can bring them into a new area again shows that habitat must be suitable if it's got to the point where they're breeding and young snakes are being found. So
that's brilliant.
Good to know that there's the effort being made out there to try and help our rarest reptile.
I did find it a little bit sad that smooth snake populations have declined more in the UK than anywhere else in the rest of Europe.
Yeah.
What does that say?
Well, I think, again, we've spoken about it so often.
We don't get political, do we?
We try not to. But
I found that a little bit sad.
I think we have spoken in a few episodes. I don't think we've made it a topic in itself, but we are one of the most nature-depleted nations in Europe. And I know when I've had friends visit European countries, they speak of the biodiversity you find out there in comparison to...
Look how many nightingales we saw in Croatia.
Yeah. That's probably the episode that we spoke about, actually. Yeah. So we are one of the most nature-depleted regions, and we have not focused very well on managing and looking after our habitats.
That's a very diplomatic way of saying it.
Because especially as we're supposed to be in the positive part of the episode. But the positive thing is that there is work going on. And again, we've said it before, and we don't get political. The problem is it's all being run by charities, which is fantastic. But we need the change from higher. We need the laws and the regulation.
Well, we've said that so many times, isn't it? That all these people can, all these organisations can do all of this work, but only government can change law.
Yeah.
And only government can implement regulation. And
when it comes to things like stopping building work on habitats, charities will often organise protests. So they will certainly contribute to the research around the value of the habitat and why things shouldn't be built there. But it's not necessarily within the power to stop a development.
No, and actually sometimes, and I see it with the RSPB, the only way they can stop it is that they buy the land.
Yeah,
that happens quite a lot.
And a lot of charities do not have the funds for that sort
absolutely.
Of thing. So it is one of those where all this fantastic work goes on, and it's vitally important, but we do need change at a higher level as well if we are to lose the rather sad accolade of being one of the most nature-depleted regions.
We are bad.
But that's not a very positive point to end it on.
No, I think the positive note is those projects that we talked about earlier on, because there's been some incredible success stories. 18,000 football pitches, equivalent of lowland heath restoration and conservation and enhancement, that's pretty significant, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can't sit here and, whereas I would normally say, go out and, if we've been chatting about nightjars or nightingales, we always say go out and try and listen to them. I can't really in good conscience say go out and try and find the smooth snake, because really, apart from the fact it's illegal to disturb
them. You should leave them alone. Yeah.
It's best if they are left alone. They need as little disturbance as possible. So I can't say, go out and find a spot and go go searching. But I think it's what I really want to do with the episodes around reptiles is raise a bit of awareness around them, because again, people are often surprised to know that we've got three species of native snake, and just a bit of appreciation for them, because there's nothing quite as exciting as seeing a snake.
No, they are stunningly beautiful.
Really, they don't deserve some of the bad rep that they
No, actually, they did. I mean, fair play to them. They did. Obviously, being down on RSPBR and the Springworks guys, I think they were showing, I think they had slow worms, actually, that they handled, yeah, which, again, you're not allowed to, but they got licensed to do that. They talked a lot about grass snakes and adders, and obviously being on that heathland, and just how beautiful and amazing. And what was really nice, again, if you go back and watch some of those episodes, people were sending in pictures of adders, you know.
Yeah, and smooth snakes are adorable.
And they're just stunningly beautiful creatures, and we should be proud that they're here, you know. We should be proud of them, because they are so beautiful.
Yeah, and do you know what, I'll plug our friend Josh. If you go over to his Instagram, he's got some fantastic footage of adders wrestling, the males wrestle to try and secure a mate and things like that. So some of the behaviour that you can see is really, it's like something out of a wildlife documentary.
And they keep themselves to themselves, you know. They're secretive animals, and they don't want to they don't want to interact. They just want to be left alone and be beautiful.
Yeah.
Because they are.
Although we do need to monitor them. But there we go, I think. That will probably round the episode up.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed a little bit of an insight into our rarest reptile. I can't guarantee anybody will see one. I've never seen one, and I have actually gone out looking for them.
No, and if you've never walked across a heathland, go and do it, because you'll see so much wildlife. Again, when I was at Arne, walking across Hyde's Heath, there were birds of prey, stonechats, Dartford warblers. I mean, bird life was amazing. Invertebrates everywhere, butterflies everywhere. I mean, it was just an amazing environment. You know, so go and walk on your local heath, because it's amazing.
Yeah, and just be respectful of the reptiles.
Yeah, but which you probably won't see anyway.
No. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the random rabbit holes that we've gone down on this episode. But Heathland's got a lot to it. So we'll catch you next time.
Thanks very much for listening, and catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.